I am so sick of the media dictating the terms of the narrative in this country. I'm so sick of having to be apologetic for who I am. I'm so sick of people in middle America being called a flyover country or slope-headed.
Conservative teabaggers.
And it's going to be teabagging day.
It's hard to talk when you're teabagging. Appreciate it very much.
It's so funny because the teabaggers, the one thing they hate is when you call them racist.
If racism is not the whole of the Tea Party, it is in its heart.
The hatred that is Timothy McVeigh, that he had. There are plenty of people like that right now.
Lots of.
I think you get the general tenor of this. It's anti-government, since this is highly promoted by the right-wing conservative network, Fox.
The left pits people against each other. Divide and conquer is the strategy. I don't want to live in that world. It is the exact opposite of E. Pluribus Unum. And what the left has stood for with political correctness is to try and get those with whom they disagree to shut up. And the Tea Party movement and Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann and Alan West and all the people that have gone out there against the mainstream media and said, you're going to call us racist? You're going to call us potential Timothy McVeighs? Fuck you. War.
Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuning in live this Wednesday, March 23rd, 2022 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. It's a wild and dystopic ride, to be sure. But here's some good news. My understanding is the archives are working all right. I sort of talked about that yesterday. And today it looks like things are sort of back to operational. As I said yesterday, I think when things are not working like a Hollywood production at RBN, I think it's a badge of honor. I think it's evidence that RBN is not underwritten by InQtel. That's just my personal opinion. But speaking of underwritten by InQtel and DARPA and BARDA and friends, there's a lot going on. Again, I think it's real convenient that Ukraine was a headline the moment, the very instant that the PR agencies were telling the press and other folks that basically the war is over. This invisible enemy has retreated for the moment, or maybe the people are just worn out on this nonsense. So we can put this one back in the bag for the moment. But wait, there's Ukraine. That's interesting. So, you know, that's in the news, and I don't understand how anyone can talk about Ukraine. You know, whatever side of the discussion you're on, I think it's weird. I've mentioned, for example, in the command line interface, if you write code, why is there a hashtag stand with Ukraine? Why is it invading places like that? That should tell you something. But I don't understand how we can have a discussion about Ukraine without talking about all of the Western intrigue that's been going on. And if we're really going to dive into that discussion, then we probably need to be talking about Brzezinski, or the ghost of Brzezinski anyway, and probably Halford Mackinder and so on and so on. You know, the geographical pivot of history and the Eurasian Balkans and so on and so on. But that's a conversation that most of us are probably unprepared to have. So we'll table that for now. And but speaking of intrigue and deception, Greg Reese does some interesting stuff. And this Enemies Within video, I think, is, well, you know, it reminds me of that document. There was that document, Rebuilding America's Defenses, Strategies, Strategy, Forces, and Resources for a New Century. Everybody always wants a new century. A report of the project for the new American century. And a bunch of neocons and friends, right? Robert Kagan, Bill Kristol, and friends, signatories on that document. And the organization, strangely enough, I think it was defunct just like 6 months after September 11, 2001. That document, well, there was, you know, most people remember on page 51 the mention of this, you know, transformation strategy that solely pursued capabilities for projecting force from the United States, for example, sacrificed forward basing an American presence would be at odds with larger American policy goals and would trouble American allies. Further, the process of transformation, even if it brings revolutionary change, is likely to be a long one, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. There was that on page 51, and a lot of people remember that. It kind of reminds me of Event 201, you know. Pandemic could happen, or Bill Gates at the Munich 2017 Munich Security Conference. It could happen, you know, whether by nature, a fluke of nature, or at the hands of a terrorist on a laptop, Bill Gates says, which is, I don't know, kind of a weird coincidence, I guess. But also, there are those excerpts from pages 59 and 60 of Rebuilding America's Defenses. Namely, communications networks will be equally, if not more, ubiquitous and dense, capable of carrying vast amounts of information securely to provide widely dispersed and diverse units with a common picture of the battlefield. The proliferation of ballistic and cruise missiles and long-range unmanned aerial vehicles. It was the Disrupt Conference in San Francisco a few years ago. Like, gosh, it was probably, what, 5 or 6 years ago now? I forget who it was that was speaking, but, you know, he said, oh, yeah, no, we're headed for a time when there will be more drones in the sky than people on the ground, is kind of what he was projecting. This is what the tech gurus and overlords are envisioning. Continuing, munitions themselves would become increasingly accurate, while new methods of attack, electronic, non-lethal, biological, will be more widely available. New methods of attack, electronic, non-lethal, biological, will be more widely available. Low-cost, long-endurance UAVs and even unattended missiles in a box will allow not only for long-range power projection, but for sustained power projection. Simulation technologies will vastly improve military training and mission planning. You know, missiles in a box, just as an aside, reminds me of Ash Carter and the SCO, the Strategic Capabilities Office. I haven't talked about that in a while, but, you know, retrofitting certain systems with cameras and all kinds of things that, you know, if you're familiar with the SCO, I've talked about that in the past, the Strategic Capabilities Office, and this kind of stuff. You know, let's re-envision this stuff and just spend a few dollars to stick not just one camera on a missile head, but maybe, I don't know, 1,000 cameras? What? Why not? They're low cost. But continuing, although it may take several decades for the process of transformation to unfold in time, the art of warfare on air, land, and sea will be vastly different than it is today. This, again, is 2000, rebuilding America's defenses. And combat, quote-unquote, likely will take place in new dimensions in space, cyberspace, and perhaps the world of microbes. Again, interesting. You know, this was, it wasn't long after this, by the way, that was it Defense Secretary Gates, I think, that said the F-35 would be the last manned aircraft that would be pursued. So skipping ahead, well, maybe just a little bit. On land, the clash of massive combined arms, armored forces may be replaced by the dashes of much lighter, stealthier, and information-intensive forces augmented by fleets of robots. Some small enough to fit in a soldiers' pockets. Control of the sea could be largely determined not by fleets of surface combatants and aircraft carriers, but from land and space-based systems, forcing navies to maneuver and fight underwater. Space itself would become a theater of war as nations gain access to space capabilities and come to rely on them. Further, the distinction between military and commercial space systems, combatants and non-combatants, will be blurred. Why is that, do you suppose? I mean, these are neocons. This isn't, you know, a war college or RAND or whatever. What is going on here? You know, who sits down and writes a document like this and says, in the coming decades, the distinction between military and commercial space systems, think about that. The distinction between military and commercial space systems, combatants and non-combatants, will be blurred. Just in a pedestrian sense, you know, the Golf Channel was founded in 1995, I think, by Arnold Palmer and who else? I forget. And, you know, catering to a a luxuriant audience, to say the least. You know, when NetJets is one of your advertisers, that kind of says something, I think, even today. But speaking of NetJets, I think a competitor, I forget what it's called, but they, I think they're advertising on Golf Channel. And I think John Elway is a spokesperson. He's probably part owner in the company or something. But that just reminds me of, I don't know. And, you know, SpaceX and what Richard Branson is doing and so on and so on, the distinction between military and commercial space systems, combatants and non-combatants, will be blurred. I mean, do we really believe that the military, et cetera, is not involved in these projects? It would be foolish and naive to think so, I think. Continuing information, but here's the thing, okay? This is as a prelude to Greg Reese's Enemies Within. This really always sticks out in my mind, especially, I mean, how many of these quotes do you want to stack up before you start going, okay, something weird's going on here? You know, Bill Gates, millions could die from a bioterrorism, you know, whether by a quirk of nature or at the hands of a terrorist with a laptop. Really? Because I'm looking around, the only terrorists I see are the best terrorists money can buy. Oh yeah, and then guys like the guy speaking at the 2017 Munich Security Conference. That's one of the, I mean, if we're going to be concerned about a terrorist, how about the guy who somehow has taken a cue from the Rockefeller playbook to reinvent himself? I don't even know how, because I remember the antitrust days. I remember, you know, Netscape and 3Com and Gary Kildall and, you know, every time Paul Allen sat down to write a book, it seems like he was trying to tell us something about this guy. And then this guy invests in Monsanto. My understanding is Roundup is a causal, there's a direct causal link between glyphosate and, let's just say Roundup and non-Hodgkin lymphoma. And what do you know? Paul Allen is not with us anymore, non-Hodgkin lymphoma, but we still have this other guy. These guys, you know, they just, they're like cockroaches. They never go away. There's a nuclear holocaust, and like cockroaches, they come out, they emerge. You know, I could see him with his little Dr. Strangelove goggles for sure. Anyway, it's just, I don't know. Very peculiar, to say the least. So, this quote, information systems will become an important focus of attack. Information systems, particularly for U.S. enemies seeking to short-circuit sophisticated American forces and advanced forms of biological warfare that can target specific genotypes, may transform biological warfare from the realm of terror to a politically useful tool. Now, there was stuff going on during World War II, but then, you know, we read books like War Against the Weak, and we realize, not so fast, War Against the Weak, eugenics, yeah, that's evil, and America's campaign to create the Übermensch, the master race. What? That was exported and then re-imported. I've talked about Unit 731 in the past, and if you, I haven't looked lately, maybe I should. If you want to talk atrocities, that you need look no further than Unit 731. And Greg Reese mentions Unit 731 in Enemies Within. So again, you start stacking up these coincidences. How many do we need to stack up before we start saying, okay, something is desperately wrong here, and this person, for example, who's reinvented himself and has people believing that he's the closest thing to a saint we might ever see in our lifetimes, is maybe someone we should take a closer look at. Anyway, without further ado, here's Greg Reese's Enemies Within. Go ahead, please.
The first nation to successfully weaponize and mass-produce deadly pathogens was Great Britain during the start of World War II, soon followed by the United States, Germany, France, and Japan. While many nations mass-produced them, Japan was notorious for deploying biological weapons, killing almost 500,000 Chinese soldiers and civilians in several military campaigns, including the 1940 bombing of Ningbo, China, when Japan's secret bioweapons unit 731 dropped ceramic bombs full of living fleas carrying the bubonic plague. German pharmaceutical company IG Farben Bayer conducted fatal human experiments on prisoners and killed over 1 million people with its cyanide-based Zyklon B. The U.S. established their own bioweapons program at Fort Detrick, Maryland in 1942, and by the end of the war, brand new facilities were completed for mass production of anthrax and other bioweapons. After the war, the directors of IG Farben were punished at the Nuremberg trials, but the scientists were secretly absorbed into America's bioweapons program. Japan was planning to attack the city of San Diego, California, with weaponized plague, but they surrendered 3 weeks prior to the scheduled attack. And while Japanese researchers arrested by Soviet forces were tried for war crimes, those captured by the United States were secretly given immunity in exchange for working with the U.S. bioweapons team. Long after World War II, the U.S. bioweapons program continued to expand with the help of Japanese and German war criminals. And in 1969, the U.S. government officially terminated their offensive biological weapons program, continuing on with a defensive biological weapons program, which was nothing more than a change of language ahead of the Biological Weapons Convention in 1972. The U.S. would continue to experiment with and produce deadly pathogens, but now under the guise of defense, and mostly defense against Russia. Of all the nations involved in bioweapons research, Russia factors in very little. The U.S. government claims that the Soviet Union had the biggest bioweapons program in history, but this is based solely on a mysterious 1979 anthrax leak and the lone testimony of Soviet defector Ken Alibek, who has also been absorbed into the U.S. bioweapons program and who has helped the U.S. surround Russia with dangerous bioweapons labs. Russia is now releasing confiscated documents of the work that was being conducted in the NATO-backed biolabs they have secured in Ukraine. These labs were allegedly developing genetically engineered bioweapons to target specific Slavic people and experimenting with ways of spreading pathogens via bats, ticks, lice, and fleas, like the work Japan's Unit 731 was doing before being secretly brought into the U.S. Meanwhile, Bill Gates is currently allowed to release hundreds of millions of genetically modified mosquitoes within the United States as some sort of disease control experiment. You can say what you want about Vladimir Putin in Russia, but they aren't the ones waging war against the people of the West. That would be the World Economic Forum, the big banks, and their lackeys of the Great Reset agenda. After the U.S. government sanctioned all the Russian people, Putin responded by only targeting a few known criminals of the Great Reset cabal, as if sending a message to the Americans that we share the same enemies. Whereas the global elites are working towards destroying the nation-states, Russia is reinventing the nation-state. Russia hopes to be the world's biggest producer of organic farming, while the globalists are pushing for genetically modified foods, bugs, and synthetic meat. The globalists are actively destroying the family, down to the mother's womb, while Russia seeks to build a society based on family and Christian values. The Russian government provides fallout shelters for the civilian population to potentially survive a nuclear war. And the U.S. government has absolutely nothing for the people. We are on our own. But FEMA reminds us to remain socially distanced while our government robs us blind and starts a nuclear war. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
He does a good job, for sure. Greg does a good job on those shorts, for sure. No doubt about it. You know, and I mean, gosh, well, you know, on and on we could go. Just even, I don't know, how about 100 years back, Spanish flu, that wasn't the Spanish flu, even though we still call it that, but you can't call it the Woo-Hoo flu or whatever, because that's just racist. It should be, again, it should be the Streisand effect in full effect. In categorical sort of fashion, if you go to Wikipedia under Spanish flu potential origins, it's the thing that Henry Lai discovered. You know, the research is divided about 50-50, it seems, but when you look closer, maybe not so much. You know, that just to keep people kind of going, well, I guess the jury's out. It's possible something bad could have happened and something nefarious was afoot, but we don't know for sure. How can we know? Well, we can do a little bit of research and look into it ourselves, I suppose. Difficult as that may be. Usually when those things happen, somebody or other ends up at the Library of Congress and reading things that are not circulated among the general public, and that should tell us something, I think. So there are some folks who've done that throughout the decades in the last, say, 100 years or so. And they always seem to come away with a different perspective than just about anything you can seem to find outside of that Alexandrian library or whatever you want to call it. So under potential origins, despite its name, historical and epidemiological data cannot identify the geographic origin of the Spanish flu. However, several theories have been proposed. Chief among them, the first top of the list, United States. The first confirmed cases originated in the United States. Well, then, yeah. how is it that we say epidemiological data cannot identify the geographic origin? And where exactly? Historian Alfred W. Crosby stated in 2003 that the flu originated in Kansas. But where exactly? America's forgotten pandemic, the influenza of 1918. And author John Barry described a January 1918 outbreak in Haskell County, Kansas, as a potential, as a point of origin in his 2004 article. And there's a curious coincidence of timing. A 2018 study of tissue slides and medical reports. Oh, and while we're at it, speaking of tissue slides and medical reports, there was the effort over the last 20 years to dig up the Spanish flu. Why? For example, over at CDC, the deadliest flu, the complete story of the discovery and reconstruction of the 1918 pandemic virus. Yeah, that's not a conspiracy. Well, maybe it is. I mean, depends on your perspective. I guess we could call CDC.gov a conspiracy blog by some accounts. I certainly might. But, you know, the table of contents, it says on this page, background, the deadly legacy of the 1918 pandemic and its importance for global efforts to prepare against future pandemics. Oh, yeah, of course, it's always about defense, like Greg pointed out. Part one, discovering a lost killer. And it's funny how a society that's sort of overrun by those seemingly in the throes of John 10:10 is enamored with this kind of thing, you know, discovering a lost killer. I think it's more than a metaphor. The story of a virus hunter's lifelong pursuit to discover the deadliest pandemic flu virus in human history. Why? Part two, building the blueprint, the story of how a team of U.S. scientists decoded and assembled the genome of the 1918 virus. Part three, the reconstruction, story of how a CDC microbiologist reconstructed the live 1918 pandemic virus in a secure CDC laboratory to unravel its secrets and protect against future pandemics. And then at the same time this is happening, you got guys like Bill Gates stumping around the country and really around the world saying, it's coming. The big one's coming. The next big one's coming. Part four, learning from the past, how the world has progressed since the 1918 pandemic and challenges. Again, this is CDC.gov. Why are we digging these things up and trying to recreate them? Oh, it's just in case nature does it again. Right. Even though you have these crazies like the PNAC, for example, writing, this kind of stuff could be used as a politically useful tool, and they have their hands in research, even though it's in a plausibly deniable sort of fashion through philanthropic organizations. That seems to work so well. I mean, if you think that Bill Gates is the closest thing to a saint that we will ever see in our lifetime, then I just think you should maybe take, I don't know, half an hour to an hour maybe, and read chapter 4, Profit Times Philanthropy Equals Power, of Gary Allen's The Rockefeller File. Profit Times Philanthropy Equals Power. And, you know, if you read it, let me just preface, if you haven't read it, yes, Gary Allen was obviously biased and opinionated, and I think rightfully so. You know, this is, I mean, Anthony Sutton was rightfully opinionated when he said, we have amongst us wolves in sheep's clothing who call themselves Americans and who use their inordinate power and influence and wealth to arm our enemies. You know, whether it's Anthony Sutton writing about, you know, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, the rise of Hitler, etc., or if it's Brzezinski bragging about drawing the Soviets into the Afghan trap, it's all the same thing. Stick around, we'll be right back.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. because you can handle the truth. Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here's a testimonial from Amazon.com. I am only 40, but I have put my body through hell working in manufacturing for 20 years. I recently started to notice a buzzing feeling along with a stuttering sensation with my heart. I had a full cardio stress done, which I passed. I decided to try Extendivite after getting the jingle stuck in my head. Halfway through the bottle, I really did notice a difference. After getting home from work, I would just sit in a chair for a few hours feeling like crap, and this stuff reduced that feeling along with heart discomfort to almost nothing. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Welcome back. There is a, sometimes there's an unintended or unintentional continuity. I've heard Jeff Bennett talking about some of this stuff recently. I also just noticed the post over at RBN, Enemies Within, the truth about the United States' questionable history of bioweapons exposed. The war in Ukraine is not what you think. You know, and speaking of GMO, you know, again, Gates is a heavy investor in Monsanto. I mean, he's the guy, he's the Svalbard seed bank guy, you know, in the Terminator seed era. He's also the data bank guy in Svalbard. So, you know, again, you know, I'm not a Howard Zinn apologist, but to paraphrase Lincoln, go with them when they're right, depart from them where they're wrong. Howard Zinn has a good point when he says, who's projecting force around the world? I mean, let's just be honest. It's impossible to argue that anyone projects force like the United States military industrial complex. But that's disingenuous because, you know, America is a sock puppet of British intrigue in simple terms. And there's more to it than that. But, you know, if we're just going to kind of cut it short, you know, I mean, whether it's the intelligence community that was established here through, you know, Rockefeller and industrial Wall Street back channels by way of British intrigue. And there are lots of books on that, but I've mentioned Jeanette Conant's The Irregulars, usually when I mention the subject, Roald Dahl and the British Spy Ring in Wartime Washington. You know, I mean, she writes early in the book, a transatlantic intelligence alliance in the form of the OSS to be headed by London's man in Washington, William Wild Bill Donovan. You know, and we still are enamored. We still have, it's fascinating. If we could get our mind around this stuff, you know, and speaking of Greg Reese and enemies within, I mean, the greatest threat we've always faced is enemies within. Speaking of Lincoln, his Lyceum address. What was the other one? Recently, I guess he has another, the Nazification of the West. I mean, again, this is, you know, the ghost of Breitbart. People are finally catching up. Andrew Breitbart felt like he was late to the discussion in 2012, and it kind of was, but the rest of us a decade later are even later to the discussion. Anyway, it's astonishing. If we had a healthy view of the intelligence conglomerate, and, you know, same time that Facebook was being created, we were being told that the Open Source Intelligence Initiative, OSINT, was important, and they had to weld all the agencies together. They need to share information. Well, that's convenient if you're someone who has access to those kinds of things. Oh, well, Chris, you know, there are levels of security and protocols and stuff. Well, there are leakers, but more importantly, I mean, I still remember it just felt weird when we went through what we went through in 2008 and Barry Satoru or whatever his name is, was kind of an enigmatic figure. Still is, and he is ushered into the halls of the oracles, basically, given highest level security clearance, and who is he? So, you know, it's kind of a Maginot line, if you will. But it sure looks fancy, doesn't it? So back to this other stuff, and then to the phones. CDC digging up the flu, Spanish flu. Why would you do all that and go to such trouble, spend millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars doing that? What about 2001 FBI thrax? What about Fauci and gain of function research? You know, that's illegal. We can't do it. Yeah, but we'll find a way. I swear, every time I see and hear him, all I see and hear is Estelle Getty. But, you know, gain of function, it's for defensive purposes or, you know, bioweapons research, but you can't do that. We have conventions against that. And so it's for defense, right? And, you know, what about AIDS? What about Jonas Salk and polio? What about, you know, on and on the list goes. It's really endless, particularly over the 20th century. And again, war against the weak comes into view, eliminationism, folks like Bill Gates saying, you know, but that's called death panels, and we're not allowed to talk about that. The last 3 months of life is really expensive. Do tell, Bill, how do we determine when the last 3 months of life occur? We're playing God now? Unabashedly? Very interesting. So, the enemy within, you know, there's that quote that circulates attributed to Cicero, but it's true. The enemy without is easy to spot. You can see him coming, usually. The one that circulates in your midst and wears our face and speaks in our tongue, that one, you know, is able, if he's allowed, to convince people, or persuade, I should say, perhaps, that, you know, he's the closest thing to a saint we'll ever see in our lifetimes. There's more on this bioweapon stuff. An astute, if you go to, what is it, ReeseReport.com, Greg Reese has a forum on his website, and there's at least some of the content is public facing. Somebody noticed that there's some interesting stuff floating around. Deadly and dangerous batches of the vax identified. And this gentleman points to, I think this is one of the earliest nods to Craig Parda Cooper's channel, I think is how you pronounce that, on BitChute. And the research into the peculiarities and anomalies in the data. You know, some of the video titles are about 17. Variation in toxicity of COVID vaccine batches. This discussion, you know, you hear people talking about this. Again, was it Jeff Bennett I heard talking about this? I mean, there are a few people. I think I heard Rivero talking about it. Anyway, COVID vax variability between lots, independent research by international team, how bad is my batch? These are all video titles. Do Pfizer batch codes code for toxicity? Tutorial 1, extracting batch data from VAERS. Deaths, disabilities, life-threatening illnesses. And, you know, I mean, I've talked from time to time Panama Papers. You know, Daphne Caruana Galizia. This was explosive. It was supposed to be, you know, the wolves were supposed to be able to hide in plain sight, because it's just the data is voluminous. There's no way anybody could get through that. Oh, but wait. Then there's Neo4j, and there are some enterprising journalists led by the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, ICIJ. And as Emil Ephraim, CEO and founder of Neo4j, has written, the Panama Papers, why it couldn't have happened 10 years ago. Now all of a sudden, you know, I mean, again, he includes the graphic from USA Today that shows that the Panama Papers 2.6 terabytes and 11.5 million documents. You know, that would take a team of researchers, you know, 100 years to pour through. But Neo4j and tools like that make it possible in, you know, to find things, you know, to find a needle in a haystack pretty quickly. Amazing. So maybe we should do a tutorial on Neo4j. Maybe we should commission someone like Daniel Schiffman to do that, the coding train. So anyway, this channel, continuing, non-GMP compliance batches, and maybe there should be training in data analysis. I don't know. You can't beat the devil at his game, though, so that's kind of a waste of time, I think. I'm being slightly rhetorical. Non-GMP compliant batches associated with deaths and disabilities, gender differences in the effects of the vaccine, the speed of death, exacting non-domestic data from VAERS, the step I took, you know, how bad is my batch.com is the website. How bad is my batch? The site may slow down due to high traffic. A backup site has been created. How bad is my batch.com to reduce overload? Again, do we need to have a team of folks? This is why I think, you know, it would be cool for these kinds of projects to have a site backed up. There are certain ways you can do this. If it's a, you know, not to nerd out too much, but you can have your site automated to package itself up essentially, or have your server package it up and do that in a way that sort of sanitizes sensitive things, whatever they might be, whether it's database credentials or whatever you want. And then just kind of maybe put a zip file or a tarball or something somewhere, maybe on your site or wherever. Maybe use GitHub. Thanks, Microsoft. And just have it, you know, as, I don't know, kind of a dead man switch or a live man switch or something like that. It can't go away. And, you know, if something happens to somebody, hopefully that means that people spread it further and wider. And if bad guys try to do something with it, then that should be evidence of a conspiracy. But who cares about that stuff anymore? Which reminds me, speaking of echoes and reverberations of history, I've mentioned Charlotte Isserby's Patriot Honor Roll, and I created my own, obviously. But on her honor roll, let's see, where is that? She reminds us of folks who stood courageously in opposition to tyranny over the decades. Where is that? One person in particular I'm thinking of. I think it's Christine Chandler, author of Enthralled, The Guru Cult of Tibetan Buddhism. Congressman John Conlon, that's who it is. Congressman John Conlon, Arizona, who led successful effort to defund controversial federally funded MAKOS program, Man, A Course of Study, which taught American students regarding practices of obscure Eskimo tribe, which, amongst other atrocities. No, maybe it wasn't. Something like that. Anyway. Gosh, which one was it? I forget. It's a good list, though. And, you know, there should be some kind of reference to content that these people put out. You know, who was Sam Blumenfeld, for example, and what did he have to say? Speaking of all of this kind of stuff. Lots and lots of folks that most people have never heard of. Anyway, backing out of the rabbit hole, you know, again, the enemy within. And speaking of Ukraine and the enemy within, again, I am astounded. If we're going to talk about Ukraine, shouldn't we talk about Otpor and Canvas and Serta Popovic and Gene Sharp and the CIA and Color Revolution and, you know, and the State Department that Norman Dodd intimated to G. Edward Griffin back in the 80s was basically captured. That was one of the most important objectives by these ne'er-do-wells that have convinced people that they're Americans, even though they really, you know, for all intents and purposes are not. Shouldn't we talk Yugoslavia? Shouldn't we talk, I don't know, Yellow Revolution, Velvet Revolution, Tulip Revolution? Shouldn't we talk Tunisia, you know, Saffron Revolution, Rose Revolution, Purple Revolution, Portugal, Philippines, Orange Revolution? Shouldn't we talk Myanmar, Lotus Revolution? Shouldn't we Jasmine Revolution, Jeans Revolution? Shouldn't we start talking about, you know, Moldova, Lebanon, Kyrgyzstan, Kuwait? And those places that Wes Clark told us. But, you know, and the Green Revolution, of course. Shouldn't we start talking about some of that? The low-intensity conflict? You know? Frank Kitson stuff. Maybe we should play Webb Tarpley. Stick around. We'll be right back.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Extendivite 7-herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org. And click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719 extension 3. 800-724-2719 extension 3.
Reluctantly crouched at the starting line, engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty, except for one man still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone.
Welcome back. I don't understand how we are not having this conversation when people talk about Ukraine. Again, it's as astounding to me that we're not talking Color Revolution, Gene Sharp, Serta Popovic, Albert Einstein Institute, State Department, CIA, da-da-da-da-da-da kind of stuff. That should be ground zero of the discussion, in my humble opinion. How can we not have that conversation? How can we not? If you're familiar with the history of, that background, basically. Journeyman Pictures, who did a great job through the pandemic nonsense with the interviews that have been, all of the folks have been unpersoned on the interwebs. They did that video back in 2011. Everyone should watch. It's still on YouTube, titled Revolutionaries for Hire. You can find it over at journeyman.tv. Revolutionaries for Hire, 2011. And Serta Popovic is sort of the continuation of Gene Sharp's work, but he never worked with terrorists. No, of course not. Not directly, but his pamphlet circulates everywhere there is what Frank Kitson referred to as low-intensity operations. Everywhere you find low-intensity operations, coincidentally, you find Gene Sharp in his pamphlet and the CIA and the State Department and the philanthropic humanitarian front for wolves. And now, since, Gene Sharp is no longer around, we have to have someone to carry on his legacy. So here's Serta Popovic, who looks a lot like Brzezinski, in my opinion. Is Popovic Brzezinski's illegitimate child or what? I don't know. And what do you know? As I've mentioned in the past, here's Serta Popovic's profile over at Harvard Kennedy School. Serta Popovic was one of the founders of the Serbian nonviolent resistance group Otpor. Otpor campaign against Serbian President Slobodan Milosevic was successful in October 2000. Speaking of October revolutions, when thousands of protesters took over the Serbian parliament. After the revolution, Popovic served a term as a member of the Serbian National Assembly, but he likes, being away from accountability. It's much more fun. In 2003, Popovic and others started the Center for Applied Nonviolent Action and Strategies, CANVAS, because low-intensity operations work, and if it ain't broke, why fix it, Blueprint for Revolution. Serta Popovic is also the author of the recent book, Blueprint for Revolution, a fun and humorous look at nonviolent activism worldwide. Yeah. In 2012, he was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize, because that's what we do historically. We nominate terrorists for peace prizes. Well, that's what some people do anyway. I would never do that. You would never do that. It's insane. And he was listed in 2014 as a young global leader by the World Economic Forum in Davos. What do you know about that? Anyway. Oh, my goodness. Second hour coming up. Stick around. I'll be right back.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. The
because you can handle the truth.